one of the clearest, sharpest images that I retain, in a way, my only firsthand sense of the Holocaust was an aunt of mine who had been interned as a child, had her arm tattooed so that she had this string of numerals on her forearm. And, you know, the sight of that, the first time I noticed it, the first time I saw it, just struck me so forcefully. And thereafter, you know, whenever I would see her, I would just seek out the sight of that, as if almost to assure myself that I hadn't imagined it the last time. And also because I have this desire, even as a child, to somehow know what it all meant. I don't mean know in an intellectual way, but to just feel the force, even in this tiny infinitesimal way, to just get some kind of direct, clear sense of what the Holocaust was.
When Michael Chabon first found Say It in Yiddish, a phrase book for travelers published in 1958, he wondered where anyone would find such a book useful. In his 2007 novel, The Yiddish Policeman's Union, Chabon invented just the place, a fictional settlement for displaced European Jews in Alaska. In The Yiddish Policeman's Union, as in so much of Chabon's work, the Holocaust is ever present in the background. Welcome to Voices on Antisemitism, a free podcast series of the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, made possible by generous support from the Oliver and Elizabeth Stanton Foundation. I'm Daniel Green. Every other week, we invite a guest to reflect about the many ways that antisemitism and hatred influence our world today. Here's author Michael Chabon.
I think more than anything else, the question that I've wrestled with in my own writing in terms of the Holocaust is how much of a right do I have to, quote unquote, use the Holocaust for fictional purposes? Is it okay for me to write about the Holocaust, you know, having had no direct personal experience of it whatsoever? To what degree am I entitled to portray or represent it in my work? You know, and ultimately I'm trying to tell stories. And it's such an unconscious process of having a kind of image occur to me, having a wish or a desire or a longing, or, you know, reading this Yiddish phrase book, Say It in Yiddish, a phrase book for travelers, a Yiddish phrase book for travelers that was published in the late 1950s. And it was a source of inspiration for me to write The Yiddish Policeman's Union. But before that, I wrote an essay trying to sort of come to terms with the idea of a phrase book for travelers in Yiddish, trying to address the question of where would you go with such a book? Where could you take it? To what destination would you travel with a Yiddish phrase book that told you how to do things like, you know, order a dental appliance in Yiddish or something like that? And in that essay, I speculated on the possibility that if the Holocaust had not happened, all of those unmurdered Jews would have stayed where they were, possibly, and reproduced and had grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And it's not unreasonable to imagine that, you know, a large number of those people would still be Yiddish speakers today, and that, you know, if you were traveling through large swaths of, you know, what's currently the Ukraine and Poland and Russia and so on, that it might be a good thing to have a Yiddish phrase book along. And just wishing so powerfully that there were such a place that I could go visit it, that there was a Yiddish-speaking country right now where I could go and take this phrase book and, you know, go to the casino and get my chips in Yiddish. And once I sort of set myself the task of responding to that wish and saying, okay, I'm going to try to write a novel set in that place so that I can visit it in fiction, I'm just forced instantly as an initial condition of writing this novel to contend with the Holocaust, because the Holocaust killed Yiddish. And if I'm going to be writing about Yiddish, a Yiddish, modern-speaking Yiddish state, I have to deal with the Holocaust somehow or other. It's going to be part of the story. I think in the Yiddish Policeman's Union, I tried to use my imagination to undo at least some of the effects of the Holocaust. and to imagine a way out of the catastrophe. And again, I suspect that part of the force that drives that novel is the consciousness that, you know, ultimately that's a tragically futile wish. I think all of us have known that sort of childish wish to have it not be. It's a natural human characteristic to sort of look back on a tragedy and try to find the points at which, if only certain things had happened differently, it might have been averted. And I think as a generation, or now generations following the Holocaust, a part of what we've all been engaged in has been a process of trying to find those points, partly for the purpose of laying blame and responsibility, you know, looking at, like, say, the actions of Franklin Roosevelt's administration, and if they had done this and if they had done that, or the sort of cliche fantasy of having a time machine and using it to go back and strangle Adolf Hitler in his cradle, or, you know, that kind of metaphysically foolish but perfectly human wishing to undo or to somehow avert catastrophe, I think is part of the legacy of my generation following the Holocaust, to have those powerful feelings of wishing it were not so, wishing it could be undone, and trying to sort of understand how it did happen, partly in order to go through that process of wishing it otherwise.
Voices on Antisemitism is a free podcast series of the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. Join us every other week to hear a new perspective on the continuing threat of antisemitism in our world today. To contribute your thoughts to our series, please call 888-70-USHMM or visit our website at www.ushmm.org. At that site, you can also listen to Voices on Genocide Prevention, a podcast series on contemporary genocide.